Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Anthony Brooks. Not long ago, Bicycling.com ranked Boston 16th on a list of America's most bike-friendly cities. So yay, we're number 16! Okay, it may not sound like something to brag about, but consider this. Bicycling.com also said this. After three appearances on our worst cities list, Boston has become a beacon of bike friendliness. So the city has come a long way. And that has a lot to do with the Hubway, the hugely successful and expanding bike share program, more bike lanes, and changing public attitudes. Cambridge just installed the area's first bike-specific traffic lights and a protected bike lane along Western Ave. So the metropolitan area is moving in the right direction. And yet, bicycle advocates say more needs to be done. Boston does have bike lanes, but they're not continuous and not always well planned. And there's still concern about too many bike accidents, oblivious motorists, and yes, reckless bikers. So what has to change to move Boston from number 16, if not number 1, into the top 5, along with cities like Boulder, Minneapolis, or top-ranked Portland, Oregon, which has 180 miles of bike lanes? Boston has about 120. Well, we want to hear from you. Are you a biker in Boston or a driver nervous about cyclists? How can the city make your bike commute safer? What would make Boston the number one biking city? Give us a call, 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. We're also on Facebook and Twitter at Radio Boston. And we're joined in the studio now by Pete Stidman. He's executive director of the Boston Cyclists Union and an avid bicyclist himself. Pete, welcome to Radio Boston. Good to have you.
Thank you. Pleasure to be here.
Also with us in the studio is Diana Lopez. She's a PhD student in health policy at Harvard University, and she's been collecting bike collision data in Boston as part of her dissertation. And Diana, pleasure to have you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
So, Pete, let me start with you. So we talked about 16th best in the city. What's your reaction to that? Should we feel good about that, moving in the right direction at least, if as well room for improvement?
Yeah, I would agree. It's better than last. And we used to be last. And,
right.
And you know, Boston was always associated with one of the worst places to bike in the country. So we have made a ton of progress. I think we've put down a lot of bike lanes on what the city likes to call low-hanging fruit. Streets that are wide enough and don't have much controversy tied to them in terms of trade-offs with parking or travel lanes or other uses. But now we're getting into the more difficult stuff, and it's an interesting time to watch what the city does and see if they're...
Well, so tell me, what is that? What is that more interesting, more difficult stuff? What's the sort of near-term or long-term goal that you're thinking of?
Well, the long-term goal is to have a connected network of low-stress bikeways around the city. So anybody would be able to travel with their kids, or if they're a little bit scared of cycling now, this would be a way, almost like having a bike path on street.
Mm-hmm.
So a lot of the streets we have in Boston, you know, are famous for having narrow streets, but we've measured actually all of them now in the city, all the major arterials anyway, and there is potential for this kind of system.
Yeah.
So one of the challenges right now, if people are watching the news, is ComAv. And the city has a lot of trade-offs to consider. They're widening the Green Line.
This is a part of Commonwealth Avenue that's actually right outside our studio. So the Green Line goes right down the middle of it, and they want to widen that, right?
Yeah, there's some new standards
having
to do with the ADA, American Disabilities Act. And but the city is not currently planning any improvements for bicycle infrastructure, although we think that's totally possible.
Mm. See, now, why is that? Because I wanted to ask you specifically about this issue on Commonwealth Ave. I also watched with interest them, you know, redoing the BU bridge. They did put a bike lane, but the bike lane sort of peters out when you get over to the Cambridge side. It's not protected in any way. So as a biker, my feeling in this city is that public perception about bicycling has gotten better insofar as there are a lot more of us on bikes, but I don't, my sense is we still need to do so much to really create an infrastructure that is truly bike friendly.
Yeah. I mean, the interim commissioner Galluli today in the Boston Magazine said bicycling is in the department's DNA. But I'm not seeing that. In what's hitting the ground. They've done a lot of great projects. The Connect Historic Boston project downtown is promising to bring cycle tracks to the city in a big way. But that was backed by a $15 million grant, so they had a little momentum. Now we're looking at, you know, if it wasn't our DNA, I think ComAv is the clearest example of where you need a protected bike lane in the city other than Mass Ave, because we see so many crashes on it. Yeah. So we had 68 crashes, and 17 of those were during, which we know cycle tracks are very good at preventing. Mm. So,
yeah, and just to be absolutely clear, when we're talking about these protected lanes, how do they work? There would actually be a physical barrier that sort of protects the bike lane between the roadside and the sidewalk side, right?
That's the basic definition, is that there's a protected, they're protected by some sort of physical buffer.
Yeah.
So actually on ComAv, we're looking at now a median cycle track on the left-hand side, similar to what they have in a bike lane on the other part of ComAv towards the Boston Common.
Hmm. Well, Diana, let me come over to you, because you've compiled a map of bike collisions in Boston with Pete, I understand, and also with the Boston Police Department and the mm-hmm. Department of Transportation. What is the map, before we talk specifically about what it shows us, what does it tell us about how safe the city is for bikers?
Yes, so in terms of safety, it does give us a sense of what corridors might be places where cyclists might want to take instead of other corridors that might have more crashes. But at the same time, I think perceiving the map as, looking at it and saying, well, it's full of dots and, you know, it's not safe to be here, I don't think that should be the case. I think that the dots on the map should be able to be used and explained. It should be explaining where we need to focus in terms of the infrastructure that Pete is talking about.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of safety, I think it should still be perceived as safe. I mean, one of the things that needs to be remembered is that bicycle crashes are rare events. It just so happens that we've compiled these points over a four-year period of time. And so it ends up looking like a lot of points. But if you look at the number of cyclists that are going through, which we don't know the full number, but also the number of vehicles that are going through, if you really think about it, it's a rare event. So, you know, the negative aspects of it only occurs when there's an actual crash with a potential injury.
Hmm. So in what way, or sort of talk a little bit about how this map is useful then for the city? I mean, if we understand that basically it's a rare event, what are we learning from this map?
Sure. So what we're learning from this map is the areas that need infrastructure are those areas that have hotspots, or those areas that, if you look at them in a GIS map or a geographic map, have a high density of crashes. And what it's allowing us to do is prioritize these capital investments. In terms of something that Pete mentioned with regards to the infrastructure, it's always really difficult. I interned with the Boston Transportation Department, and it's always really difficult to actually get something done in terms of installations, mostly because you have to deal with multiple agencies all in tandem. So you have, you know, the transportation department, but you also have the police department, and you have multiple departments that are working on one area. And so to get everyone on the same page, you know, a lot of it is the politics, but a lot of it is also the funding for the infrastructure. It's hard to coordinate.
Yeah. Yeah, I'd love to have your take on that, Pete, about the funding. You know, I was looking at a really interesting piece that the Globe did a while back. It ran a wonderful piece comparing the commitment of public dollars to bike infrastructure in Amsterdam and other Dutch cities. Now, I know this is sort of like the holy grail of sort of bike-friendly cities, but they spend $39 per citizen per year. According to the Boston Globe, Boston spends $1.92.
Right.
So is that really what this comes down to sort of make the infrastructure improvements that we need? It's really about money.
Yeah, absolutely. And things have not, you know, it's a big bureaucracy. It's the city and the state and the feds that we really have to turn around and get thinking more about bicycling. Because actually, when you do invest in bicycling, it pays off in much bigger ways.
How?
A bike lane or a cycle track does not cost nearly as much when it's included in a project as a full street. So you get more bang for your buck. There's more usage. And, you know, to do the entire city, it would be, I don't have that figure handy, but it's a lot less than it would be to just reconstruct all the streets of the city.
Sure. So. Let's take a couple of calls. Listeners, we're talking about how to make Boston a better biking city. According to some measurements, we've come a long way from maybe one of the worst cities in the country to, anyway, a city that belongs in the top 10. We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Join the conversation. I said the top 10. I guess number 16, that puts us in the top 20, not quite in the top 10. But anyway, it's a big move from where we were. Let's go to Bob, who's calling from Hyde Park. Hi, Bob. You're on the air.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you for having the show. I'm really interested in where it goes, and I agree the investment's important. I bicycle every morning, and I just want to submit something that's a low-cost thing that could be done. I ride out of Hyde Park through Mattapan up through Milton, and there's a lot of breakdown lanes and bicycle paths that have so much debris and gravel on them, I end up, or broken glass, I end up pulling into the travel lane with the cars when I shouldn't need to. I think this is a low-cost, simple thing, and it's not just the city. The state has to do its part because some of these are state highways and they don't send sweepers to clean out the bike lane.
All right, Bob, good suggestion. Pete, does that sound reasonable? Just basic maintenance we need to keep up with?
Yeah, I'm familiar with the area a little bit. I'm not sure the color is red on American Legion Highway or Morton Street or some of the streets up that way. But often, you know, some of those wider thoroughfares, actually, on Morton Street, we're halfway down it with a buffered bike lane now. Mm-hmm. But traditionally, it hadn't been cleaned up. So people trying to access JP from Mattapan had to deal with all kinds of debris in the roadway. It's very common.
Bob, thanks for that call. Let's take another call from Mike, who's calling from Weston. Hi, Mike. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for taking the call. A quick point. I've ridden in a couple of cities, New York and Boston, most prominently, a lot, and I think you've got entrenched problems here in Boston that will never allow us to get the city into the top tier. Basically, we're a 19th century city built on cow paths and streets that are one way and too narrow all over the place versus New York, where you've got a grid and wide streets and some margin of safety for bicyclists. And I just don't see how, without huge changes in infrastructure on the roadways and just really changing the layout of the city, how you can ever bring it into the top tier.
It's an interesting point, Diana. You're nodding your head. Do you think that's a challenge that is sort of difficult for Boston to overcome?
Absolutely. I can totally understand that. I actually did research on this when I lived in San Francisco. And of course, San Francisco is very similar to Boston in the sense that it's not a grid. And we had similar challenges. And I think one thing that Pete will probably mention is building infrastructure that separates the bicycles from the motor vehicles. Mm-hmm. A lot of research has shown that if you can actually separate it, which is what they do in European countries, that you can reduce the fatalities and the injuries dramatically. So that's definitely something that I think Boston should focus on, and I think focusing on an actual network rather than going, you know, street by street is what would be important.
Yeah, Pete, do you want to add to that?
Yeah, we actually have looked at this for a while with the city. We helped them develop their Boston Bike Network Master Plan, and in that study, they measured the streets. And like I was mentioning earlier, you know, we are a city of cow passes. But the streets, many of the major arterials are wide enough. We have a lot of wide medians, say like Blue Hill and Warren or Commonwealth right here. Beacon Street has a very wide middle reservation. There's a lot of major routes for cyclists right now that could be converted if we just focus our attention on it.
Well, let's turn to the city that got the number one spot on Bicycling.com's best biking city list. This is Portland, Oregon. If anyone's ever been out there, you'll probably appreciate why they got that ranking. 3 hours ahead and 15 spots above in best bicycling cities. So joining us is Rob Sadowski. He's online from Portland. He's the executive director of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance in Oregon. And Rob, good to have you. Thanks for joining us on Radio Boston.
Happy happy to be here.
So you've been listening to our conversation. I'm just wondering sort of what sets Portland apart. How did you earn that number one spot? I mean, I know you could probably go through a list of specific infrastructural, you know, achievements out there, but what happened out there that put you guys on top of that list?
Well, I'd say there's no number one magic bullet. It's combining things and putting things together in a combined network. It's important not just to have those nice, safe streets on the arterial boulevards that Pete was talking about, but it's also important to have neighborhood streets where you can get from your house to your school or from your house to that arterial street or to from your house to a trail so that you can get through to that. So we have 319 miles of bikeways. A little more than was reported earlier. Of those, more than 60 of those are neighborhood greenways, where there are neighborhood streets that are designed for 20 miles an hour, but easy for bikes to ride side by side with priorities. You can still get to drive on them if you're driving in a car, but you can't go many blocks because you'll end up getting diverted. It's really made for local traffic. Combine that with our great Sunday parkways or open streets, where we five times a year we close 13 miles of neighborhood streets to cars for people walking and biking and strolling and dogs. And then throw into that, on top of that, our Safe Routes to School program, which is in 80 of our Portland public schools, where we're teaching kids bike safety first in the classroom, then on the blacktop, and finally on the street.
See, this is amazing. I wanted to get you to talk a little about this because when I was referring to this Boston Globe article that was comparing what's going on in Boston with what was going on in Holland, one of the things that the Dutch were talking about is exactly what you're doing out there, and that is educating kids in school about biking, because this isn't just about infrastructure. It's really about a sort of cultural shift as well. So how does that work in Portland?
Well, we partner very closely both with our school district as well as our Bureau of Transportation. We have contract dollars that is we use some of our parking income from the city to help pay for this contract work, and we deliver. It's a 10-hour curriculum. It's either 1 week for 2 hours a day or 1 hour a day for 2 weeks, and our goal is to do two things. One is to get kids feeling really comfortable and safe on the street. If they don't know how to ride a bike, we'll actually teach them how to ride. We teach them how to signal. We teach them how to wear helmets. We do it because we know that this is our future population. Some of these kids are going to grow up to bike every day. Some of these kids are never going to bike, but they're going to grow up to be driving cars, driving trucks, etc., and they'll have a better, much better awareness of what it's like to be a bicyclist on the road. Mm-hmm. So we can serve those both purposes at the same time.
Pete, what do you think?
We do some adult education.
Sure.
But really, the best way to do it is hit them when they're young.
Hit them when they're young. I wanted to ask you, Pete, about that. I mean, it just seems like whenever we do shows like this, we inevitably get calls complaining about, it's not just about safe roads, it's not just about infrastructure, it's about bike riders who are frequently reckless and sort of changing the culture around that as well, too, right?
Absolutely. I've been experimenting a lot with riding slow lately, and I find it to be a lot safer. But that's the easy tip. I think the tougher thing is educating all of us. And really what that requires ultimately is a commitment from Boston Public Schools or other school systems in the state. There are some things that go on. MassBike gets contracts from the state to do bike education in a lot of cities. We don't have Safe Routes to School in the city of Boston right now, but we do have the youth cycling program that the city runs, which is actually a little bit better because they actually get the kids on the bikes, and they do about 3,500, but they do that in-house, the city. They don't contract it out like they do in Portland.
Yeah. So. Rob, stay on the line because we've got a listener from Newburyport, Rama, who has a question for you. Rama, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi, everybody. I've just wondered, does Portland or any other cities or countries have laws coming on the books or already on the books prohibiting people from wearing headphones while they're biking? I see that as a major problem, and if we Googled it, we'd find many, many deaths because of that, and I think that's part of the problem with bikers and the reputation that they get. Why are they wearing headphones, and are there ordinances prohibiting it in Portland or other places to make it safer?
Joe Rama, it's good to hear your voice, and it's a good question. Rob, what do you think?
Well, so Portland and the state of Oregon does not have a law preventing it. We suggest people use common sense. There have recently been studies that have shown that listening to headphones, certainly at low to moderate levels, is not a dangerous activity. There are not any evidence that wearing headphones creates a dangerous problem. The best thing that I recommend for anyone is behave predictably, pay attention, drive or operate your vehicle, whether it's a bike or a car or you're walking, in a defensive and a non-offensive manner, and have fun.
All right, that's Rob Sadowski. He's the executive director of the Bicycle Transportation Alliance in Oregon. Rob, thanks so much for joining us today. We really appreciate it. Diane, I'd love to ask you, we literally have about 30 or 40 seconds left, but the Hubway, hugely successful bike share program in Boston, it's expanding. There's talk of getting it into parts of the city that are not as well served. What do we need to think about when we do that?
Sure. So I think one of the things we need to think about is expanding out to areas where vulnerable populations live. I was on their website today, and if you look at the map of where the Hubway stations are located, areas where you have Latinos, you know, East Boston, areas where you have a lot of Haitians living, you know, near Rosendale, you don't have a lot of Hubway stations there. So while the subsidy that's being proposed is something that's fantastic, I think it would be important to focus on those populations and making sure that they're getting the appropriate information in a culturally competent way.
That makes sense. So expand, but expand with some deliberation. That's Diana Lopez. She's a PhD student in health policy at Harvard. And Pete Studman, executive director at the Boston Cyclists Union. Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you.
And listeners, sorry we didn't get a chance to get to you. Post your comments at radioboston.org. And stay with us. There's a lot more ahead. I'm Anthony Brooks. This is Radio Boston.